This is Barbara Ridenour with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 24, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Verla L. Anderson Trotter, 90, of Decatur, died Sunday, July 19, 2015. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, July 27, 2015, at Fairlawn Cemetery in Decatur. Memorials may be directed to Christ Church in Effingham, Illinois. The family is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home of Decatur. Thelma L. Brilley of Decatur died July 16, 2015. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 25th, at St. Thomas Catholic Church. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., with Mass following. Burial will be in Graceland Fairlawn Cemetery and conclude with the flight home ceremony. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to St. Thomas Catholic Church or the Macon County Senior Center. Gordon Dwayne Budd, OZ, 73, of Mason Point in Sullivan, died Wednesday, July 22, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, July 28th, at the McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, July 27th. At the funeral home. Burial will be in Marrowbone Township Cemetery in Bethany. Memorial contributions may be made to Therapeutic Writing of Tucson in Tucson, Arizona. Gary Lee Sedlak, 62, of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, formerly of Decatur, died Wednesday, July 22, 2015. The funeral service will be private. Family will receive friends Thursday, July 23rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Goldfinch Funeral Home, Beach Chapel. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Cancer Society of Myrtle Beach or to Feed the Children, organization in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Goldfinch Funeral Home, Beach Chapel, is in charge of arrangements. J. Douglas Doug Swift, 52, of Assumption, died July 22, 2015. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today in Sites Funeral Home, Assumption. Private funeral services are at a later date. Royal W. Zendel, 88, of Decatur, died Tuesday, July 21, 2015. Services to celebrate his life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 25th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Entombment will be in Graceland Star of Hope Mausoleum. Family has requested no flowers, please. We'll turn now to the editorial page and continue with Letters to the Editor. New career possible through RCC training. I am 43 years old, and in March I was laid off my job. I was in total shock and disbelief about what to do regarding my future or what it held. I applied for many jobs and had several interviews, none of which panned out. One morning, I sat at my kitchen table reading the newspaper. I always look in the job section where I notice a lot of trucking jobs. That day, I went out to Richland Community College, where I met Paula Morrell and the lead commercial driver's license training instructor, John Smith. They were very helpful and even got me in contact with Archer Daniels Midland. That day changed my life. A short time later, I was accepted into the truck driver training program, where I can proudly say I earned my Class A commercial driver's license with tanker endorsement. I recently was accepted for employment with ADM. I never, ever thought that was possible. I'd like to thank Morrell, Smith, and the two night instructors at Richland for their patience with me and for the new career path. They aided and assisted me in choosing my career. Never give up. Signed, Christopher Pettijohn, Macon. Another idea to solve state's budget deficit. Some people did not like my suggestion of reducing the Illinois budget deficit by adding a surcharge to the tax bill of seniors who are not in abject poverty. So I have another one. Why don't we issue a rain barrel to every household, collect the water in tankers, and truck it to California for sale to Governor Jerry Brown? California doesn't know what to do with all the revenue it's raised since it's passed its own tax increase, and it is in a severe drought. If Governor Bruce Rauner is as savvy a businessman as he claims to be, he should be able to extort a high enough price from Brown to wipe out our budget deficit. If he's not that bright, he can hire Donald Trump to negotiate the deal. The Donald has the monumental ego it takes to produce what he wants simply by saying he can do it. He does not need a plan, just another chance to be on TV, so he can insult anyone he has not yet insulted. Signed, Barbara Minnick, Decatur. Here's an editorial. A solution for budget stalemate. Here's an idea to solve the state's budget impasse. Kick Governor Bruce Rauner, House Speaker Mike Madigan, and Senate President John Cullerton out of the negotiations. While we're at it, remove the leaders of the GOP in both chambers and let the negotiations be handled by personnel lower on the totem pole in the governor's office and in the House and Senate. It will never happen, which is the case with a lot of great ideas, but it might work. Cullerton, Rauner, Madigan, et al. Have spent so much time sniping and arguing that the acrimony may have gone beyond the usual political bickering. It may have gotten personal, and the chances for reasonable compromise are hampered by hurt feelings. It's a kind of version of kick the bums out. Labor negotiations are different from political budget negotiations, but the idea has worked at least once in the labor arena. A long time ago, I covered a strike by a major company. I won't reveal the company or the union involved because the conversation I'm going to describe happened over adult beverages and was totally off the record. It's also at least 25 years old. A federal mediator had been called in to help the negotiations along, and within a matter of days, a month-long strike had been settled. After the strike had been settled, a few reporters and the federal mediator happened to be in the same tavern and got to talking. When asked how the impasse got broken, he told us that the key was that he kicked the top two negotiators from both the company and the union out of the room. Those guys had been at it so long and had gotten so adversarial, they just couldn't be reasonable. I kicked them out, and the discussion soon turned productive, and the whole thing came together. Kicking those guys out wasn't the only reason it worked. Everyone was tired of being of the strike, but it helped. Actually, there's some precedent in the Illinois General Assembly, even though the focus, as it should be, is on the failure to construct a budget. That doesn't mean the General Assembly didn't get some things done. As Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois at Springfield, writes in Illinois Issues, the General Assembly enacted some significant legislation. Chief among those actions was a comprehensive law that paves the way for law enforcement officers to wear body cameras, but also establishes procedures that should be taken care of in a case of law enforcement shooting of an individual. The law, negotiated between law enforcement groups and civil rights groups such as the NAACP, could become a model for the rest of the nation. Haven't heard much about that bill, which awaits the governor's signature? That may be the fault of media. but it's also because rank-and-file members of the General Assembly did most of the work. Working together and with interested constituencies, they came up with a law that appears to be effective and workable. Maybe it's time to apply that concept to the budget. There is a solution to the state's budget mess. It won't be easy or particularly popular, but there is a solution. Maybe we have the wrong people in the room trying to solve the problem. G. Sawyer, Herald and Review. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to members of the Macon County Sheriff's Office for shaving their heads in support of Cassie Pope. Cassie, age 5, has an autoimmune disease, alopecia, which attacks a victim's hair follicles. About 30 members of the sheriff's office had their heads shaved to support Cassie, who is otherwise healthy. Members of the Decatur Police Department and the county's emergency management agency also joined in, as well as 5 local barbers who shaved the heads. Thumbs up to the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur, which unveiled its renovated Walter E. Smith Center last week. The $142,000 renovation included replacing the gym floor and bleachers, adding air conditioning, and repainting the game room. The center was dedicated to Smith, who grew up near the club and was with the organization for 32 years until his retirement as executive director in 2012. Funds for the renovation came from Archer Daniels Midland Company and an anonymous donor, current executive director Bruce Jeffrey, said. Thumbs up to the Gus Macker 3-on-3 basketball tournament, which staged another successful event in downtown Decatur last week. The tournament was a mainstay of the Decatur summer scene until it ended about 15 years ago. Rodney Walker revived the tournament 3 years ago, and it has continued to grow in the streets and parking lots surrounding the Skywalker Sports Complex. This year, 140 teams of all ages and abilities signed up to play. Major sponsors of the tournament are the Charles Lucas Law Firm, Skywalker, and ESPN 1050 Radio. Thumbs down to our political leaders in Springfield, who are entering the fourth week without a state budget. There are a few signs that progress is being made toward a solution. Thumbs up to the Discover the Dinosaurs exhibit at the Decatur Civic Center last weekend, which delighted dinosaur enthusiasts young and old. Activities included a dino dig, dino theater, dino den, scavenger hunt, and a coloring station. Other parts of the exhibit included dinosaur rides, miniature golf, and inflatables. The exhibit gave dinosaur lovers a chance to see what the real dinosaurs look like and learn more about the Earth's earlier inhabitants. Thumbs up to the Relay for Life in Macon County, which for the 20th year raised money for cancer research and recognized those who survived the disease. Benefits from the relay go to the American Cancer Society, and research has made a difference. In the 20 years, Macon County has had a Relay for Life. Cancer deaths have decreased 22%. The event also celebrates those who have survived the disease, sending a clear message that cancer can be managed. Tim Kaine, the medium is the message. Berkeley Breathitt's returned last week to his most publicly successful cartoon work brought unrestrained joy from thousands of fans and distress to a few more. Breathitt's Bloom County daily comic strip was to the 1980s what Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury was to the 1970s, a pointed, jabbing bit of satire sharply sticking us in the side every morning or afternoon, back when we still had those newspapers around in a lot of places. Both were often the most subversive thing in your newspaper, and to those reached most deeply, they became a part of the instruction of questioning everything and tying it to humor where you can. Both retired and came back. Breathitt returned in novel fashion via a post on Facebook. In interviews and social media statements, he described his excitement about returning, and a good portion of his excitement comes from content can be distributed these days. In their time, Trudeau and Breathed, and every other daily strip author, was bound by a couple of important items: deadlines and suitable content. Peanuts, Beetle Bailey, Garfield, and most of their other friends on the funny pages weren't commenting immediately on current events. In fact, sometimes by the time the new trend or current was mentioned in one of those strips, that was a sure sign the trend or event had moved wholly into the mainstream. And newspapers were touchy about content because they had to be. Sometimes it's all right to push your customers' buttons. Other times those customers will kick back hard, and no one enjoys that. Not the people at the paper who take calls from angry and offended readers, nor the syndicators who take calls from the newspaper people, and not the artist who doesn't want to change his art at all. At the time, Breathed isn't attempting to put Bloom County in newspapers. Now he's following the lead of other web comics whose presence has exploded. Get the content out there and in front of the eyes of the public. Maybe he hasn't figured out yet how to monetize his work, but that's his concern, not ours. The delivery system he's chosen for the time being, however, is causing some anxiety, as evidenced by the comments area of an NPR story about Breathed's return. We all know at least one person who's determined to be hip by not being hip, whose contempt for the contemporary becomes their uniform. These are the people whose disdain of Facebook or Twitter or smartphones is the statement of rebellion, a position from which they're reluctant to retreat. Maybe it's reflective of a portion of NPR's web readership, but some people in the comments of the Breathed story were furious, aghast that they might have to even visit Facebook to see new Bloom County strips. And that's one of the biggest challenges we face as content consumers in the digital era. The medium chosen by the artist is the one we have to use, and we have more access to more art than at any time in history. Things are happening now that were inconceivable or the wildest of dreams even a decade ago. But now, Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix are just three of the hundreds, if not thousands, of digital delivery services with exclusive content. If you want to see Orange is the New Black, you need to be on Netflix. Seinfeld and South Park are exclusive to Hulu. It may change, but for now, Facebook is where you can find Bloom County. What you can do with that information is solely up to you. But as we're finding out more and more regarding digital content, those acquiring that content are interested in getting into your pockets. Dear Abby, Mom's helpful hints become criticism in girlfriend's ears. Dear Abby, I'm frustrated about how to connect with my young adult son's 18-year-old girlfriend. He told me she has had a bad relationship with her divorced parents, so he's hoping we can bond. A problem that comes up frequently is she's so anxious to show me how skilled and knowledgeable she is, she misses any tips and techniques I try to subtly teach her. They live together in another state, so our weekend visits at each other's homes seem to amplify the problem. I'll give you an example. When I removed ice cubes from an ice tray, I ran water over the bottom briefly before twisting the tray. She laughed like I was clueless and said, "You don't have to do that, just twist the tray." I replied that the water helped release the cubes more cleanly because of the physics of the warmer water. She teared up, left the room, and told my son, who repeated it to me, that I was being critical of her. I have expressed appreciation for her, and my son has reassured her of my intentions, but I'm getting tired of tiptoeing around her issues. How can I help her understand that she can learn from me without it meaning that I think any less of her? Signed, On Eggshells in Montana. Dear On Eggshells, it might be a good idea to quit trying to mother or teach this young woman anything, unless you are specifically asked, because it appears she's not interested in learning from you. From where I sit, you not only were not critical of her, but the opposite was true of what happened in that kitchen. If she hadn't laughed at you, ridiculed you for the way you emptied the ice tray, you wouldn't have felt it necessary to explain your technique. So take a step back and stop trying to help her, because it's obviously not appreciated. Dear Abby, I have new downstairs neighbors. While they appear to be pleasant in most circumstances, I cannot ignore the fact that the wife cries inconsolably in their bedroom 3 or 4 times a week, late at night. I never hear any yelling or disruption that leads up to this, just loud sobbing in the bedroom that keeps me up several times a week. I don't think she's being abused, but I do think she might be depressed. Can you think of any kind way to send her to my therapist up the street for some help? Stick a business card in their door anonymously? Bring it up more directly? Signed, Up All Night in Washington, D.C. Dear Up All Night, talk privately with the woman and tell her you're concerned about her because you've heard her crying. Do not ask her why, but if she volunteers, listen to what she has to say. She may need a grief support group, as you suggested, or a therapist. If either of those is the case, you should suggest it. Now we'll turn back to the Decatur Herald, or Decatur Tribune online, and read some more. The last time I talked with Tuna was about my death. The death of Mayor Michael T. McElroy, Tuna, on Friday was the first time I can remember that a mayor of our city died in office, and it really jolted our community and beyond. As readers know, and as I've explained in the City Beat column, Tuna was a good friend. We were elected to offices at the same time in 2003 and re-elected to a second term together in 2007. My last conversation with Tuna was when he called me here at the newspaper, and we talked for about half an hour about city issues, the stress of previous council meeting, 3.5 hours long and tense at times, and other issues. Most people don't understand the incredible stress that often goes with the mayor's position, and I believe Tuna always felt that I would know because we served on council together and when I occupied the mayor's chair and the stress that went with it. Stress builds up over years, and it can take its toll on those who serve. So we talked not only as friend to friend, but as former mayor to present mayor. Details of what we talked about should remain confidential, because Tuna's call wasn't about any newspaper story, but a personal conversation. As we reached the end of the conversation, Tuna said that before he let me go, he had to tell me something that really caused him some concern, and then relief. He referred to the column I wrote earlier this month where police and fire department officers had come to our building on an early weekend morning because they had a report that something bad had possibly happened to me. That was the story about my car running with no one around, and when no one could reach me, officers were prepared to come through the ceiling of the office to get me. The story is in the July 1st edition. Tuna said that he was at the Signature Cup golf tournament when he received a message from a friend who had been listening to the police scanner. The friend told him that police and fire department personnel were being dispatched to the Tribune, and it was thought that I either had a heart attack or was incapacitated in some way or possibly dead. Tuna tried to find out more about it, what had happened, but it took a while, and he began to believe the worst had happened. He was one of the few people who has my cell phone and private phone line numbers, but apparently didn't have either one with him. Tuna told me that he even drove by my house to see if cars or other people were in the driveway, as if something had happened to me. "I really felt bad until I knew you were okay," he told me. "When I read your column, then I understood what had happened and was relieved it was a false alarm. I told him it was something like Mark Twain is alleged to have said. The report of my death was greatly exaggerated." We both laughed, and He said he always felt better when we talked, and I told him that I also enjoyed those times. Only a few days later I received the news that Tuna was dead, and I thought about our last conversation and how we joked about my death, and both of us were relieved it wasn't true. But this time it was true, and the report of his death was not exaggerated. Tuna was gone, and there would be no more conversations or laughs between us, not in this life. I've been editor of this newspaper for a long, long time, and aside from the death of a family member, there's been no death that has directly impacted me more than Tuna's death, and I'm sure many have the same feeling. Writing about city government will never be the same for me without my friend Tuna. Update on July 20th traffic crash at Route 121 in Lincoln Memorial Parkway. On July 20th at approximately 8:45 p.m., the Macon County Sheriff's Office received a call regarding a single vehicle traffic crash with injuries near the intersection of Route 121 and Lincoln Memorial Parkway. Upon arrival, deputies located a 1997 Buick Century with extensive damage in a cornfield on the northeast side of the intersection. Through witness interviews and the preliminary investigation, was determined that the Buick was traveling southeast on Route 121 when it passed a vehicle that was traveling the same direction just prior to the intersection. Another vehicle was traveling northwest on Route 121 when the Buick was making its pass. The driver of the Buick quickly swerved in front of the vehicle it was passing and lost control. The Buick subsequently crossed over the center line, went into a bean field, and began to roll over multiple times. The Buick continued to roll, crossing Lincoln Memorial Parkway and coming to rest in the cornfield on the east side of the roadway. The driver of the car, a 25-year-old male from Decatur, was extricated from the Buick and airlifted to St. John's Hospital in Springfield. One passenger, a 29-year-old male from Clinton, was ejected from the car and immediately transported to St. John's Hospital in Springfield by Decatur Ambulance Service. Initial reports at the scene indicated there were only two occupants in the vehicle at the time of the crash. While the accident reconstruction team conducted their on-scene investigation, they located a third occupant of the vehicle who'd been ejected, lying several rows further into the field. That occupant, a 26-year-old male from Iliopolis, was airlifted to St. John's Hospital in Springfield. The driver and the 29-year-old passenger are still in St. John's Hospital, listed in critical condition. The 26-year-old passenger is still in St. John's Hospital, listed in stable condition. The traffic crash is still under investigation by our department. There has been no arrest made at this time. Assisting at the scene was the Warrensburg Fire Protection District, the Latham Volunteer Fire Department, Arch Air Medical Services, and the Decatur Ambulance Service. That's all we have time for today's Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 24th, 2015, with stories from Decatur Tribune Online. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a pleasant weekend and week to follow.